Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
Hello, this is international Catholic singer Anna Nuzzo, inviting you to join me and Father Dan Cambra of the Marian Fathers on a select international tour's Divine Mercy pilgrimage to Poland and the Czech Republic. It takes place in September of 2019, and we would love for you to join us. For more information, go to my website, annanuzzo.com. Thank you, and God bless.
Do you wish you knew the saints better? Overwhelmed with all the events in Catholic history and just wish you could tie it all together? It's tough work, and even scientists have determined that it takes approximately 400 repetitions to create a new synapse in the brain. Unless it is done with play, in which case it takes between 10 and 20 repetitions. Introducing Saint Cards, where the facts about saints and history are presented in fun and engaging games for ages 4 to 104. Check out Saint Cards at saintcards.com and begin the fun for your family, school, and parish today.
Introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media. I'm your host, Pete Sox, a Catholic book blogger. Today with us, we have a returning guest. Gary Jansen is the director of Image Books and an executive editor at Penguin Random House, where he's edited and published books by New York Times bestselling authors Pope Benedict XVI, Pope Francis, Deepak Chopra, Michael Singer, Robert Barron, Scott Hahn, Gabrielle Bernstein, and Greg Kincaid. He's the author of the bestselling memoir Holy Ghosts, or how a not-so-good Catholic boy became a believer in things that go bump in the night. Also, the 15-minute prayer solution and Station to Station. Today, Gary joins me to discuss a classic that has been brought back to print by Image Books, and that is Your Life is Worth Living, 50 Lessons to Deepen Your Faith by Fulton Sheen. Gary, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Pete. It's great to be back on. Thanks so much.
Yeah, no problem. So, to begin with, can you give us an overview of this Catholic book classic by Fulton Sheen? What was his intent in writing it? And it's essentially a collection of essays. So where did they come from and how did everything get joined into this book?
Yeah, absolutely. So the, I think the subtitle like really gives a lot, it tells a lot about the book, right? It's 50 Lessons to Deepen Your Faith. And what this is, it's really 50 talks that Fulton Sheen gave back in around 1965, I believe. And so the formation of this book is really interesting. So these were originally transcriptions from, and he used to have an audio ministry. And so back in 1965, he would just kind of go out and give talks, right? And he would give these sometimes short talks, sometimes long talks, and a number of these conversations that he had that were recorded were acquired by this guy named John Hallingstad, right, who decided to turn them into a book. And so he did, and the book was published probably in 1980, and it was published through a small publishing house called St. Andrew's Press. And so, it wasn't very well known. I mean, as we know, with a lot of small Catholic presses, distribution can be a challenge. And so when the rights came up for us to acquire it at Image, I really jumped on it because, one, we've published a number of books by Fulton Sheen over the years, but also this is the information and the writing in it and the lessons that Fulton Sheen was trying to convey were so good, Pete. I mean, mm-hmm. It's such a great and inspiring book. So as I was reading the manuscript when it came to us, I went, oh wow, we need to have this for Image.
So actually, I'm glad Image Books brought it back, because it's a very valuable book, and I think it's one that's really, even though it was written at an earlier time, it's still very applicable to our situation in the church today.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And that was one of the things that I really loved about it, was how fresh the material felt, right, and how fresh the insights felt, you know, reading Fulton Sheen. Now again, this is written over 50, or it was originally recorded like 50 years mm-hmm. ago, and then turned into a book, you know, over 30 years ago. But but it just goes to show, like, you know, as much as is the times change, right, the heart of Catholicism doesn't, right? It's this eternal heart, and that's what's so great about Sheen, is that he's such a great storyteller, mm-hmm. but he taps into this eternal heart of the church, and so you read this and you're like, well, this is totally relevant to us today. You know, the problems that we were suffering 50 years ago are the problems that we're facing today. Maybe a little bit different, but the underlying problems are all there, and the questions that we've had are still the same. So it really, even though this is we can call it a classic, it really feels contemporary. And mm-hmm. it's part of the reason why, if people like check the book out, it has a really contemporary looking cover. And we really were going for something that just said, hey, you know what? This might be an old book, but you know what? There's something really fresh and inviting in there right now.
So I think it's kind of interesting. You and I are recording this when we are, because just a week ago, the decision was made by the courts for New York to release Fulton Sheen's body back to Peoria, Illinois, mm-hmm. which will help with the advancement of his journey to sainthood. So can you tell us a bit about Fulton Sheen and why he today is still such an impactful teacher to us?
Yeah, you know, so he was born right after World War I, right? So he came of age, he was a young man in around when World War II hits. And he there was something very charismatic about Fulton Sheen, so much so that he starts off kind of evangelizing on the radio, but then he really becomes one of the first televangelists, right, in America. So he has, like, in 1951, right, he has his TV show, right, called Life is Worth Living. Mm-hmm. Now, a TV show, and we can't even, like, think about this. And we have EWTN now. But, this is kind of like prime time stuff, where he was eventually that show moves into prime time, right? And becomes something that the people are watching, on not on their cable station, right? But on their basic TV channels, right? Mm-hmm. And so there really was this, there were evangelists who were using radio and media at the time, but not really a lot of Catholics, right? Fulton Sheen was really the one who kind of brought, the Catholic Church and the Catholic teachings into people's living rooms. And so there's a lot of comparisons now between Robert Barron, who wrote a foreword for this, and once I saw this book and read the pages, I thought, we need to have Robert Barron, introduce this, because how many times have we heard, well, Robert Barron is the new Fulton Sheen, right? He's the one who's out there doing things with this, with new media. Back in, the 50s, the new media was TV. And so he really did a lot to bring the Catholic faith to Americans. And it's very, very, I don't want to say homespun, because that makes it sound like, kitschy. But there was definitely this very pragmatic, practical way of looking at our spirituality, of looking at religion, of looking at ethics, right? And it was coming into us through our TVs. And so I think in one big way, Fulton Sheen ends up kind of sculpting in the American Catholic experience. And then throughout, he continued to have like radio programs and TV programs throughout his life. I think he even won an Emmy Award at a certain point.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he did a lot to evangelize, and, he's been up for, he's at the venerable position now on his road to sainthood, but I think a lot of people feel like, hey, here's someone who embodied the faith, and we should look to make him a saint in the years to come.
So I can kind of hear it in your replies that there's definitely been an effect the book has had on you. How has it affected you?
Yeah, you know, it was so, you know, sometimes I, as a publisher, I have to read for work. So I'm reading, you know, I have to read a certain way. Is this going to be something that's marketable to people? Is this going to be readable for the general audience? Are people going to gravitate toward this? Are they going to like it? And you have to kind of have a certain set of eyeglasses that you wear when you are reading a book for publication. And so all of those things came to the top. You know, it's very readable. It's very accessible. But then I just started reading it recently for Lent, right? Coming back to it, not as a publisher, but as a reader. And it has been, wow, it has been like transformative just in my faith experience, because one of the reasons why we published the book the way we did it is that there's 50 chapters and they're all like under 10 pages. Most of them are, you know, 5 or 6 or 7 pages long. So they're easily digestible, mm-hmm. and they're easily, even though there's complex stuff and some incredibly epiphany-like material in there, they're digestible. And, you know, I had a book that just came out recently called Microshifts, which is about making small changes in your life. And this idea of like, how can I use Fulton Sheehan to make small changes in my life? Well, you know, what a great time to do that at the beginning of Lent, right? You got 40 days, right? And so you got 50 lessons in this, not to oversell the book, but we got 50 lessons and we got 40 days in Lent, which means, Pete, you get 10 extra days.
That's right.
Cool is that, right? Mm-hmm. On your spiritual journey. And, you know, and he covers, you know, I know you had said something about, you know, it's kind of like a Fulton Sheehan catechism. And mm-hmm. In many ways, it is, because it takes you through all the different dynamics of the Catholic Church.
Yeah, and that is what my observation was. It's divided. The book's divided into 5 parts: God and man, Christ and his church, sin, sacraments, and world, soul, and things. So essentially, it is Sheehan's take on a catechism, essentially.
Yeah, and you know, in some ways, even though this was, well, I guess this was actually published earlier than the catechism. You know, the catechism only came out in, 1992? Mm-hmm. I mean, I should know this because we published it, right?
Yeah, I was going to say, Gary, come
on. But I believe it was 1992 when we published it the first time, so 26 years ago. Otherwise, you know, we would use John Hardin's, you know, Catechism of the Catholic Church, or, you know, various books of the Baltimore Catechism. But Fulton Sheehan, you know, in these talks really was providing through audio, right, and through the use of just sound, this incredible, you know, dynamic version of the Church's Catechism. And so it really does, you know, span everything that our contemporary catechism explores. Doesn't go into as great detail, of course. But what's so great about it is that Fulton Sheehan uses stories, right? He's such a good storyteller. Mm. And, you know, and he's great with analogies. So where our catechism can be very didactic and very scholarly in places, you know, Fulton Sheehan will share a story to illustrate something on angels or something on marriage or something on, you know, the Eucharist. And it really makes it, you know, one thing I'm always talking about with authors as an editor is, hey, you know what, this line, this idea is very abstract, you know, which makes it kind of heady, which, you know, is good in one instance. But if you could add something concrete to it, if you could give an example, if you could take, you know, this headiness and not dumb it down, but illustrate it, you know, in a way that people can relate to it, then you really have a winning formula. And so this book really has a winning formula.
Absolutely. And we'll get more into what the book all entails. We're going to take a quick break. You've been listening to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media, and we'll be right back.
The Bible is filled with surprises. Father William L. Burton, OFM, doesn't want you to be intimidated by studying the Bible. In fact, as a scripture scholar, he believes reading God's Word is not only educational, but also fun and entertaining. In Abba, Isn't Daddy, and Other Biblical Surprises, What Catholics Really Need to Know About Scripture Study, Burton explores a number of fascinating facts that help you become more familiar with the Bible, scripture study, and your Catholic faith. Check out Abba Isn't Daddy and Other Biblical Surprises at AveMariaPress.com, or look for it wherever books and ebooks are sold.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media. Today we have with us Gary Jansen, and he's talking about Image Books' latest release, Your Life is Worth Living, written by Fulton Sheen. And Gary, I'd like to highlight a few chapters of the book today. So we're going to test your knowledge a bit and see how well you actually read the book. The first chapter, The Philosophy of Life, has a classic line about how we get out of bed in the morning, whether we say, is it good morning, good God, or good morning.
Is it good morning, God, or is it good God morning?
Yes. So that really sets up the purpose of this book, doesn't it?
It does, you know, because I think, you know, I've only seen a handful of episodes of Life is Worth Living, but there is this celebration of life that Fulton Sheen tries to get across to us, right, and tries to demonstrate in his words. But it's also one of the motivating factors in his life as a Catholic and as a priest. And it's this celebration of life. I mean, Jesus died on the cross to give us life, right? And we should be celebrating it. And the philosophy of life is, you know, this movement toward love. It's this movement toward Christ. And so you can have like two responses. Well, he says you can have two responses when you wake up, right, from sleep, which is, good morning, God, right? This kind of like excitement. I'm excited, you know, for whatever comes my way, God, because I love you so much and because I'm drawing closer and closer to you every day, you know, whatever it is, even if it's, catching the flu or it's, you know, a bad day at work, I'm going to realize that this is all has a purpose in my life. And I'm going to find you, God, in whatever happens to me. And that's an amazing way to live, right? And mm-hmm. I think that's what our faith calls us to put God before all things. And if we have ultimate belief and faith in God, then anything that does happen to us is all somehow part of God's bigger plan for us, right? So that's all good stuff. Or he says, unfortunately, this is what happens to most people in the world, is that they wake up and it's, oh, good God, it's morning. This kind of almost depressed, anxious, stress-filled idea of the coming day, right? And so we have this experience about, I don't want to engage in the world. I don't want to engage what's going to happen next. I don't want to have to deal with, you know, a broken family or a bad job. I just kind of want to stay in bed and I want to retreat. And obviously, Fulton Sheen is like, that is not the way to life. That's the way to death, right? And mm-hmm. you may be able to go through periods of that. We all go through periods where we may feel less than excited about life. But Fulton Sheen is saying, ultimately, if you go down that path for too long, you're going to end up destroying your life. You're going to end up, you know, moving further and further away from God. Because when we have, you know, when we have those experiences, we're supposed to turn it over to God. We're supposed to say, hey, you know what? There is something bigger here. But when we think small, right, I think God calls us to think bigger. Jesus calls us to think bigger. But when we think small and we think God isn't there, that's when everything falls apart.
Absolutely. Absolutely. As we continue through the book, there's a chapter where Sheen discusses miracles and that they're a sign of Christ being from God, but he also focuses intently on the resurrection. We're obviously in Lent as we record this. One nugget in that chapter really jumped out to me, and what a spectacle it was for armed guards to be at the tomb of a dead man, unless Romans themselves actually did have even a slimmer of belief that he was what he claimed was true, they wouldn't have put those guards there. What are your thoughts on this?
You know, I went back and I went back to go read that recently, and I do get what – let me just start off by saying, you know what? That chapter on miracles really has helped me understand miracles more. And if I'm understanding Sheen correctly, right, that miracles essentially – nothing exists outside the nature of God, right? So even when miracles happen, right, they are, you know, we call them supernatural experiences, but they're really, really natural experiences. Now, we may not understand them, right? We may not be able to we may not know how to activate them or perform like a miracle like that. You know, when God, you know, cures the blind, he is performing what seems to be a miracle. It's a miracle to us because we do not understand, you know, how God necessarily works in the world. Though Jesus does say at a certain point, hey, if you believe in me, you could do things even greater than I can. But we haven't been able to tap into it. So we have these things called miracles, which are really just the part of the natural world, right? Mm-hmm. And I bring this up because I was just watching something recently from the guy who's the head of Skeptic Magazine. His name is, I think it's Robert Shermer or John Shermer. Shermer is definitely his last name. And look, I have a lot of respect for the guy. I mean, he definitely calls BS on a lot of things, and which I think he should. But he obviously is very antagonistic toward religion and miracles and stuff like that. And he was basically saying, hey, you know what? You know what a miracle is? A miracle is just, you know, something natural that we just don't understand, right? And I'm like, wait, that's what Fulton Sheehan said, right? So we guys, you know, we're not disagreeing here. And so I thought that was a really, really cool connection. Now, coming back to your question about the armed guards, right, and this idea of the armed guards at the tomb, you know, having some kind of, like, inkling. I guess Rome had some kind of unsettlement within themselves that, hey, maybe all of this stuff, which seems to be not true, could actually be true. And so, you know, Sheen brings it up. But I guess, Pete, I would like to actually like to know a little bit more of like your reading of it, because while I honor and I respect Fulton Sheen, I think a big reason why the guards were there was because they were afraid of not necessarily the resurrection, but of Jesus's followers coming, right, and stealing the body. And I think it's all, I mean, I think it's said right there in Matthew, mm-hmm. right, that they were nervous about grave robbing and that the grave robbing could turn into something else. So while I understand, like, what Sheehan was going for on that, mm-hmm. I was a little, like, at the same time, I was kind of, that would have been me, like, if I was in the audience, my hand would have went up and I would have said, Bishop, Your Excellency, well, what about this? So what do you think? I mean, you read that part.
That's a good point. I mean, the gospel does say that was one of the things that they were definitely worried about. But on the flip side of that, I think that Sheen does lead us down a path of something that there is some truth to, because you got to look at the Roman Empire itself and everything that they have been dealing with this man named Jesus, and it was constantly kind of blowing up in their face. I mean, no matter how many times they tried to say this guy's a charlatan, people shouldn't be following him, it continually blew up in their face. So I kind of do understand where Sheen went with that, and I kind of do kind of subscribe to that thought process a little bit, because they're like, okay, so the guy's dead now. There's one last thing he could possibly do. He's claiming he's going to rise from the dead. He said this. His believers believe it. Maybe we should take some precautions here.
mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I mean, so this idea of, you know, I mean, again, we're not living at that time, right?
But right.
And so the idea of miracles, you know, the idea of the miracles was that, you know, Jesus was renowned for these acts and for these signs that he was performing. And so I'm sure plenty of it did filter into the Roman Empire and the folks in Jerusalem. And so I do get where Sheehan's coming mm-hmm. from. And I do like the idea of, you know, that even this kind of what I guess we could call, but just for sake of simplicity, this kind of like supernatural element in the ministry of Jesus, you know, had affected, you know, the Roman rule at the time. So there was something special and something very deep going mm-hmm. on when
Absolutely.
The guards show up at the tomb.
Yeah. You know, another point that Sheen discusses that I thought was very interesting as a convert myself is he discusses how during the first, you know, 25 years or so of the church, you couldn't go, okay, how can I know what to believe? I'll go grab my Bible. It didn't exist, and everything was taught through tradition, and it was taught by what the apostles who were with Jesus passed down, and his mother. And that's always perplexed me, how our brothers and sisters in other faiths can deny that, and they rely completely on sola scriptura when the sola scriptura they're relying on didn't exist.
Yeah, it's good, right? I mean, I think those are one of those POW movements, like, you know, I think as Catholics, a lot of times we feel overly scrutinized, you know, that, you know, our Protestant brothers and sisters, you know, are probably more aggressive against us than we're aggressive against them. And, you know, they're constantly challenging our beliefs and all of that. But my goodness, I mean, if it's not, if there isn't just a problem with, you know, that idea of like sola scriptura, you know, the or sola scriptura, which is, you know, the Gospels did not start the church, right? Mm-hmm. You know, the church, which existed, you know, created the Gospels, right? The Gospels come out of the church, you know, and the, and Fulton Sheen goes on to like really kind of like press that home. Like you were saying, you know, the story of Mary and her virgin birth and her relationship with Jesus and how important she was, these were things that were discussed and that were believed at the time of Jesus's life and those in between moments from his death and resurrection to the writing of the Gospels. And we know, as you know, as has been pointed out, that there are decades between, you know, the writing there. Now, you know, some, there's definitely discrepancies on how long it took, but the but as you're saying, you know, if people had a question, then they talked to each other. They didn't go to the Bible, and so, you know, it's I've been really fortunate to work with an author about on a book that's coming out next year, and I just asked him a question. He's a Bible scholar, about the letter of James, right? So, you know, the whole idea of like we are saved by, you know, the justification of faith, we're saved by faith alone. I said, yeah, but, you know, but it says very distinctly in the letter of James, right? Even though Paul, you know, like talks about, you know, justification by faith, it says very clearly in the letter of James, you got to do good works. It just says it there, right? It's faith and good works. And the response was that Martin Luther at the time wasn't really familiar with the letter of James, right? And after he had found out about it or someone pointed it out to him, he tried to do a lot to get it actually removed from the canon, because it really kind of throws a monkey wrench in the whole idea. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this idea of, you know, there are definitely, I want to be very respectful of the different denominations, but at the same time, you know, some of their questioning about our faith, you know, is very, very easily answered, and Fulton Sheen does a good job of that.
Yeah, and another examples of this is Christ talking of the Eucharist, you know, eat my flesh, drink my blood, and the people turned away, and he didn't go, whoa, time out, come back, that's not what I meant. And, you know, the parts where some people latch onto, well, Christ had brothers and sisters, it says so right in Scripture, but you also have to look at the context of that word. I'm pretty certain that if Mary had other children, she would have told, hey, I went through two other births here. There were some other kids.
Right. Right.
So that,
and you know, yeah, absolutely. And I think the, you know, these things, there's a lot of people who will write off the teachings of the Catholic Church, you know, but if you really like pay attention, if you really kind of like dive into the theology, but also the history, people have been writing about this stuff for 2,000 years, you know, and we pretty much come to a place now where we have answers for stuff, and those answers aren't flippant answers that someone just made up, right?
Mm-hmm.
They come from a long line of tradition. They come from a long line of theologians, thinkers, popes, philosophers, right? This has all been thought out very, very long and very, very clearly. Now, some of it can be a little bit, you know, there's definitely room for argument in certain places, but it always kind of like annoys me when someone will just flippantly like try to write this stuff off without saying, hey, you know what? People have thought about this, and they've thought about this long, and they've thought about it hard, and, you know, and they would have arguments about these sort of things. So, you know, you may disagree with it, but you can't write it off.
Right, right. That's true. We're going to take another quick break. We'll be right back. You've been listening to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media.
Marriage is ordered between one man and one woman because, like God's love, it is called to be fruitful, open to life.
Well,
There's a lot of confusion in the culture today, but here is some clarity in the following beautiful quote from the Catechism of the Catholic Church, 2335. Each of the two sexes is an image of the power and tenderness of God, with equal dignity, though in a different way. The union of man and woman in marriage is a way of imitating in the flesh the Creator's generosity and fecundity. End quote. Listen, be not afraid. Couples that are willing to live openness to life in their marriage will receive not only many spiritual benefits, but a very practical strengthening of their marriage. I'm Jim Littleton, forming FaithfulFamilies.com.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media. I'm your host, Pete Sox, a Catholic book blogger. Today we're spending it with Gary Jansen, and he's telling us about Image Books' latest release, Your Life is Worth Living, 50 Lessons to Deepen Your Faith by Fulton Sheen. We've covered a good bit of ground here, Gary. One thing I want to point out is in one chapter, I think it's very relative to the situation in the church today, and that's Sheen's chapter on authority and infallibility. And I know there are those listening who have serious doubts about the bishops right now and some of the decisions they've made. So in light of what Sheen wrote in this chapter, why should we not lose faith in the authority of the church?
That's good. So, I mean, I like the way that you articulated that. Look, I mean, we can lose faith. Personally, I think it's okay, and I'm speaking just from a personal, to lose faith in an individual bishop, right? I mean, there are people, or not just a bishop, but any kind of leader, when a leader has done something that they should not have done, right? And said they've done something, and they've lost something. But I think what Fulton Sheen would say, like in the big scheme of things, is that, you know, the bishop is part, when you become a bishop, you become part of a long lineage that goes all the way back, right, to Peter, right? Mm-hmm. So to be a bishop means to be an apostle, right? And to be a purveyor of the truth, right? A descendant of the truth. And so it's this long lineage, it's this family of Jesus that really kind of brings us to the light of Revelation. Now, there can be darkness, right, within that lineage, as we know that there can be black sheep in a family, right? I mean, even in, I think Fulton Sheen talks about the genealogy of Jesus. Not all of those people who are in Jesus' genealogy, though Jesus is pure, though Jesus is perfect, doesn't mean that all those people in Jesus' genealogy was perfect, mm-hmm. right? There's a lot of charlatans in there. There's people who of ill repute, right, who are mentioned in the genealogy. And even in our faith, man, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, it is not squeaky clean. I mean, Jesus is squeaky clean, but hey, man, Moses was a murderer. You know,
yeah.
He murdered an Egyptian, right? David was a lot like Tony Soprano, right? He offered, he ordered a hit, right? So that he could take the man's wife, right? Paul, we can't say Paul necessarily killed Christians, right? But he was definitely an accessory to murder, right? He was there persecuting them, and whether or not he threw the stone or, you know, threw a spear or shot an arrow, that is not 100% clear, but he was definitely someone who incited violence, right, against Christians. Yet, if you look at it, these are three of the biggest, most important cornerstones of our faith, right? So Moses, David, and Paul. And essentially, they're all murderers. Now, this isn't like to say, you know, hey, this makes everything okay. It doesn't make anything okay. But it's just to say that within the lineage of Christ, that not everybody is squeaky clean, mm-hmm. right? But that does not necessarily undermine the idea of the authority of what Jesus enacted at the Last Supper through his death and through his resurrection, and then was passed on to Peter. There may be bumps in the road, but ultimately we have to kind of like keep the faith and keep going and realize that Jesus will save us, right? Jesus is saving us, that Jesus consistently saves us, even through dark times, even if those dark times, you know, happen within the church themselves, mm-hmm. within the church itself.
It's interesting that you know, in this book and in a number of other of his writings and talks, Sheen talks about communism. And now with the whole McCarrick episode, we have these stories coming out of a possible Russian infiltration into the church. Whether that's proven or not, ultimately, we won't know. But what does Sheen have to say about communism, and was he somewhat prophetic in what he wrote?
Yeah, so again, coming up, like, you know, obviously, Sheen lives through World War II, right? He lives through the Cold War. His theology, his way of living, you know, is like ours is as well, is modified and is influenced by the world around him, right? So he's growing up in a time when communism was wow. I mean, was the one of the big fears in American society. It still is in some ways, but not the way it was in the 50s and the 60s. And so, you know, I think he really, you know, he makes a good point about, you know, authoritarianism, right? And that it comes right down to it. It's like communism is really authoritarianism, right? Which is, you know, just this, I don't know. It's about absolute power. It's about, you know, preying on, like, using dogma, right, to influence people. You know, and a lot of people will say, well, you got all this Catholic dogma and all that stuff. But Fulton Sheen, gets cut right to the chase and says, you know, Catholicism, our faith, has nothing to do with dogma, right? It has to do with a living person who is Jesus Christ. You know, and from that comes a mystical body of teachings, right? It's not an abstract dogma the way that communism would be an abstract dogma. So this idea is that authoritarianism, like communism, like starts with a party line, right? But we start our lives off with the Lord, right? The Son of the Living God, right? Who says that I am the truth, and then truth is identified in Christ's personality. So you kind of have this, you know, a lot of people always like say, you know, I can take like the spirituality part, but I can't take the dogma, and we could honestly say, well, yes, I mean, yes, there's a catechism, which I guess you could say is the dogma, right? But our real, like, faith is founded in Jesus Christ. It's not founded in a writing or in an idea. It is founded actually in a real live person. So, you know, I think there's this, you know, I think authoritarianism, I think Sheen would say as well, you know, is very, very dangerous for society. And so in many ways he was very, you know, prophetic in his discussion of the topic, you know, not just in this book, but throughout his life.
Right, right. If you watch video of Bishop Sheen saying Mass, you see his love for the Mass. And with that in mind, and with what he writes about it, how can we ourselves grow in our love and appreciation of the sacrifice of the Mass?
Yeah, it's great. You know, I mean, if you really... If you ever do watch, you know, Fulton Sheen, like, go to town, he's really a man embodied with the Holy Spirit. You know, and one of my favorite words, Pete, is enthusiasm, right? Because it has the Greek root in theos, right? God within, like, in God. So when you're enthusiastic, right, Pete, whether or not it's you or Fulton Sheen or, you know, Robert Barron or the little old lady in the back of the church praying the rosary, when you're filled with enthusiasm for something, you know, it's really saying that you're filled with God, right? You're filled with the Spirit. And so this idea of, you know, of embracing the Mass and embracing it with enthusiasm, living a life of enthusiasm, right? And a life where we really, where God embodies us. It's kind of this, you know, when we talk about possession, you know, it's often in a negative way, right? Or possessed by evil spirits. Right, but I think the Eucharist calls us to be possessed, you know, by Christ Almighty, right? Which is why we take Christ into our bodies, right? So that we can become more and more like Christ, so that we can possess His Spirit, so that we can live in His glory and live in the way that He lived. And so, you know, by embracing the Mass, you know, and again embracing like this mystical body of teachings, of experience that's all unified like within Christ, right? Then, you know, then every Mass that's offered, man, is just, you know, prayers, you know, it's prayers for all of us. It's prayers to God, and it's prayers back to us. And there's this there's this continuing relationship of ebb and flow, and you know, it's like a heart that, again, coming back to this idea of the heart that kind of like pumps life away and then pumps life into it, pumps life away and then pumps life into it. So he, you know, his writings on the Mass are some of the beautiful, most beautiful in the book.
In light of, Sheen also covers marriage in this book, and in light of how we're seeing traditional marriage being attacked today, what would Sheen think about of our society today other than we've absolutely lost our minds?
Well, he was a straight shooter, so it would be interesting, you know, to have, you know, to bring to resurrect both Fulton Sheen and Mother Angelica and kind of like put them in a room together and see what they would say about everything. The, you know, I think he would just come back and say, you know, that, you know, obviously marriage is a sacrament, right? And when you engage in the sacrament, it's, you know, it's not a two-way relationship, right? It's you know, it's again, this person of Christ, you know, exists and bonds, you know, two people together. And so I think he would just come back and say that this is, there's a certain law that God has given us, right? And we need to be very cognizant about the way, you know, God has given us this law and how God has, you know, like provided for us over the years, and to realize that, you know, when this the sacred bond of marriage is really kind of a relationship that goes beyond just like a man and a woman. There's something very, very intrinsic and mysterious about the relationship between two people who love each other and are bonded together in Christ.
So we've covered a good deal today, and really we only touched the tip of the iceberg with this book. There's plenty of more in it. Of what we did not cover, what were some important highlights to you?
You know, I really, again, you know, I do love this, and I know the idea of, like, supernatural stuff always kind of comes back to me, but I do love his writings on the angels, right, and I do love his writings on the Eucharist. And so, you know, this is just a really, it is a great book, and it's been terrific, you know, just, one, publishing it, but also revisiting it as a reader. And you know, I really love the fact that it's become my daily devotional over throughout Lent, and it's been a way to just, you know, kind of, you know, bring good storytelling into my life, but also to bring lessons and to pass those stories on to other people. So I not only do that by just talking, you know, to my family around the dinner table about some of the stuff I read, but, you know, but now, you know, being the publisher on the book, being able to kind of spread that word and get the message out to everybody has just been, you know, it's been a blessing for me.
That's great. So before we leave today, you briefly mentioned that you have a book out, and can you tell us a bit about that and maybe set us up for another future episode?
Oh, absolutely. Thanks so much, Pete. So it's called Micro Shifts, and it's called Transforming Your Life One Step at a Time. And it really, you know, it's something that I've, looking back over the last 10 years of like writing about spirituality and writing about my Catholic faith, I think it's so much of it comes down to this idea of like making small incremental changes. And the idea of micro shifts, or the idea of micro shifting, which is what's this tiny small thing that we can do in our lives that can have a radical consequence for us later on in life. Right. So, I mean, I tell a story about how I almost got hit by a car in New York City. And literally, I missed it by, and it actually even grazed my elbow. But I had missed, like, disaster by, like, an inch. Literally, like, an inch. And this was a taxi that came flying through a red light. And you think about how, you know, there's sometimes just a small shift backwards or a small shift forwards or to the left and the right can literally change your life, right? And so the book is a series of 10 chapters that have, you know, that through story, but also through practical ideas, talks about what are small changes that you can make in your life that eventually, that impact your spiritual life. And, you know, one of the ones, just to kind of give you just a preview, is about sleep and the importance of sleep in the spiritual life. You know, and for many years, I thought, you know, I was suffering from really bad depression, Pete. You know, I'd wake up and be like, why am I not connecting, like, to people, to God? Why do I feel so abandoned all the time? And then I started monitoring my sleep, and like, well, I'm only getting about 4.5 hours, 5 hours of sleep, but that can't have anything to do with it. Until one day, Peter, I was so exhausted, I fell asleep at like 10 o'clock at night, woke up at like 6 the next morning, And it was this, and it was like it was some kind of weird like TV commercial where I was like jumping through like fields of flowers and everything was beautiful and I loved everybody and I felt so connected to God. And I went, oh, wait a minute, maybe I just need more sleep. And I started paying attention to sleep in my life and my relationship with God. And when I don't get sleep, I kind of have a bad relationship with God. And so a lot of times we have to kind of pay attention to our physical bodies, you know, because they can tell us a lot about, you know, how we're connecting to the world around us or how we're disconnecting to the world around us.
Good stuff. So where can people find Your Life is Worth Living, 50 Lessons to Deepen Your Faith?
Absolutely. So Barnes & Noble, your local bookstore, your local Catholic bookstore, Amazon, of course. So check it out. And obviously it's available on ebook as well.
Awesome. Well, that's all we have time for today, Gary. Thanks so much for taking time out of your schedule and spending it with us. Any closing thoughts?
No, just blessings to everybody as you continue on your journey through life. And love Jesus, love your neighbor as yourself.
All right.
So have a great one.
All right. With that, you've been listening to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media. I'm your host, Pete Sox, a Catholic book blogger. And until next time, God bless.
Breadbox Media programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com.
CMF Curo is the country's first Catholic healthcare ministry to provide an affordable health sharing solution rooted in Catholic teaching and community. Learn more at mycatholichealthcare.com/podcast. That's mycatholichealthcare.com/podcast.